and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and with me in cyberspace is Jim Allen.
Hey, John. Well, we're kind of back to our usual haunts now in separate parts of Tokyo.
Well, it's nice and quiet.
It is indeed. It is indeed.
I did get a comment from about the show last week, which someone said, taping in a noisy restaurant doesn't work. I don't think so. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I mean, sometimes it might have been hard to hear, but, you know, that's why it's a podcast, so you can back it up and listen again.
I enjoyed the part where we recorded the first show, and then we had the pizza. The rest of it is was forgettable.
All right. Well, stay warm, buddy. Stay warm. Okay. That's all I can say about that. My apologies, and please stay warm. Okay. We've got an interview with a special guest. We're going to talk about Alex Ramirez, discuss the opening of winter, not spring training, and winter camp, and not spring training, and discuss major league guys who might be, or should be, or could be, or
let's just say if they do, John knows where to tell them to go.
That's right. I know exactly where to tell them to go. So let's start by clearing the bases. All right, so I talked to Claudio Rodriguez. He's a reporter from Venezuela, and he's been covering Japanese baseball since 2001. He lives in Toronto, but he wakes up early to watch some games sometimes on the internet, and he comes here and visits and does some reporting. He has a website, which I will post on my blog, and it's for Spanish-speaking people. He writes in Spanish, and he basically covers the Latin ballplayers. And you've met him. I know you've met him.
I know, because I've met him. He's introduced himself to me at Tokyo Dome now and then.
Yeah, so,
I was thinking about this, and I remember the reporter from Venezuela and doing stories on this and that, and I'm going, ha-ha!
Right. So he has written the show. You guys might recognize the name Claudio, and he actually has a question for us today too. And he says he really misses the show in the off season. He let us know that he would mind if we did it a lot more frequent, taped a lot more frequently than we have been. But hey, you know, everybody's got a rest, I guess.
Yeah.
There's not that much going on. I don't know. I wish I could. Make
There's a lot more going on than I can deal with even in the winter, but it is not a lot. It's not overflow. And if you're a writer, you write from the overflow.
That's right. Well, I wish we could do a show every day. But Claudio has talked to a few guys, and he sat down with me the other night, so let's take a listen to the interview. Hi, I'm joined by Claudio Rodriguez. You're living in Toronto, but you're originally from Venezuela, correct?
That's correct, yes.
All right, and you focus on Latin players, and I'm wondering, has that number increased a lot in the recent years?
Yes, I mean, we have seen a steady increase of Latin players coming to Japan. For the past, let's say, 15, 16 years or so, like starting 1996, you see that number increasing every year, especially with the new hires, right, the newcomers that are
right.
Coming to play for the first time in Japan. You see a steady increase, like, in the past 16 years, it has been just once or twice that you see maybe four or five new players. After that, it's always, 9, 8, 10, 11, it's
right.
it's a steady increase of Latin imports to Japanese baseball, definitely.
Well, that's good, because it gives you more to talk about, but it keeps you busy, I bet.
No, definitely. Like I thought, I mean, for the longest time, I've been working on Japanese baseball, but I was covering just Venezuelan players, because obviously I'm from Venezuela, and I used to do it for some newspapers and magazines in Venezuela, but then I thought, the need for information they have in Venezuela is the same need they have in the Dominican Republic or Puerto Rico. They don't have a Spanish website that can tell them, what are those players doing in Japan.
Right.
So I thought as well, if I'm going to do this, let's just do it for everybody, for every Latin country, because they have the same need as they do in Venezuela. So, let's take advantage of it.
All right. Well, it's good to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on.
No, thank you for inviting me.
All right, so a lot of people weren't surprised to see Alex Ramirez bolt from Yomiuri, with his streak being stopped for reasons unknown. I mean, he was hurt, but he's played through a lot of injuries, we know.
Exactly, yeah.
And he was yanked out of the cleanup hole for a while and not put back even when he was, back and healthy, supposedly healthy or healthy enough to play. But signing with Yokohama, that really surprised a lot of people. What did he tell you about the move?
Well, you know, it wasn't a surprise to me because I knew, you know, what he was planning all the time. Like, whenever I talked to him, even when I first interviewed him after he got to Yomiuri in 2008, he told me right at that time, look, I'm planning on getting to 2,000 hits, but I don't think I'm going to do it with Yomiuri because they're trying to give younger players an opportunity. So I don't think I'm going to be here that long. Mm-hmm. So he knew from the very beginning that he was going to have to leave the team sooner or later because of their plans. And I think that actually encouraged him to do better on the team because he knew his time on Yomiuri was going to be short. So I think he just really made the most out of it.
Right.
So when he said he was moving to Yokohama, it wasn't a surprise because he also has those plans that, you know, he wants to be a manager in Japan in the future. So he wanted to go to a low-profile team where he can make a difference, where he can get his numbers that he's looking after, and where he can get possibly the opportunity of being a manager in the future. And you know, Yokohama fits that description completely. That's a perfect place for him to go because that's what he wanted to do. So it wasn't a surprise for me when he made the move because it makes perfect sense for what he's looking.
Well, now you bring up a couple of interesting points, but let's stick to what we were talking about, which was his records. Now, you said he wants to get to 2,000 hits. I know he wants to get to 400 home runs, and maybe perhaps that'll be enough to get him in the Japanese Hall of Fame.
Exactly,
It'll get him into the Meikyukai. But, I mean, talk about the him chasing those records. I mean, is that really important to him, or is he more focused on the team and trying to get it? I mean, a low profile team like the Bay Stars, I mean, no winning seasons forever, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, the records are important for him, right? He does want to get to those records, and, I mean, if he has a fantastic season, has he the same way he has had, you know, in the past few years, he may reach those two records this same year. So one season would be enough for him to get there. Now, the thing with Yokohama is he says, you know, I've been in Yakult, and I've won a championship with them. I've been with Yomiuri, and I've won a championship with them, too. So, you know, and you've seen it with other Japanese players, too. It's just a time of saying, okay, you know, let me try something different. Let me go to a team that where there's really no winning whatsoever, where they don't have that culture, and let me try to, you know, change that. Let me take it as a challenge. Let me see what I can do for those guys. Like, you know, at the end of the day, he's pretty much at the end of his career, so he knows, you know, I'm not really wasting much. I've won titles already. Mm-hmm. Let me just try something new since I have the time still to do it. So, you know, I think even if he gets Yokohama out of the last place and gets into fourth, let's say, that would be a huge success for him and you know, for the team in general. So, you know, let's see what he's capable of doing.
Yeah, I mean, I always joke about the Bay Stars having a reserve seat in the Central League cellar. But,
and
the four straight years of finishing in last place, and, you know, gosh, if we just started counting them up, we would never stop. But, I mean, he has the desire to be the first manager, or I guess a Latin manager in Japan. I didn't check that. I'm not sure if that's actually...
Yeah, it would be. I think it would be the first Latin manager. I mean, it's been a few foreign managers, but all of them have been American, as far as I know.
Right, right. But I'm wondering, I mean, how likely is that, and would he really want to do that in Yokohama? I mean, you know, wouldn't you want to start out a place where you have at least a moderate chance of success, and then, you know, because they're really hard on foreign managers. I mean, look at Bobby Valentine, the way he got treated, even though he won championships there, or a championship here.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, from my point of view, I guess he wanted to start or to try to get that opportunity in the place where it's easier to get that opportunity. I mean, to be a foreign player and now someone asked to manage the Yomiuri Giants is kind of difficult. It's not going to happen that easy.
Right.
But, you know, if you have a team that's a losing team that nobody seems to be truly interested in, and it's probably easier to get the opportunity on that team because, you know, this guy may make the difference, may make us into a contender. So, you know, let's give him a chance. What do we have to lose?
All right, well, we'll see how that goes. I mean, hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to him about those things, you know, once the season starts. Now, I want to also talk about veteran foreign players in Japan, and I guess we'll focus on some of the Latin guys, but they don't always get treated so well in Japan. You know, it's kind of like they're disposable. And a couple cases in particular, Jose Fernandez being dumped by the Cebu Lions after, you know, a pretty decent season with the ball and the pitchers and, I'm sorry, and the umpire changes and all that stuff. And then Jose Ortiz with SoftBank, I mean, they just basically kicked him to the end of the bench and never used him. And then in the offseason, they just dumped him. And he's still unsigned as far as I know.
Yes, that's true. Like, I was a little surprised with Jose Fernandez because it's like, you know, he had a decent season. He led all Latin players in RBIs last year and everything. And, I mean, his 2010 season, even though it was just a half season because he came in late, was pretty good. I felt it was really good. And last year, I think he didn't do that bad. And he had this great game in the first stage of the Climax Series, where he got that big hit on the game that won the series for them. So you know, it's I think he was a valuable asset for the Cebu Lions last year. I think he was third on the team on RBIs, right. And all of a sudden you see them cutting him off, and you're like, well, you know, what is this about? But I mean, pretty much immediately he signed with Rakuten, so that's good. Like, he's gonna get to have his 10th season in Japan, which is really good for him. I think he already has the status of a Japanese player. He's not going to fulfill a foreign spot on the roster, I believe. And if not, it's going to happen sometime during the season. But, you know, it's great for him. It's gonna be his 10th season in Japan, and he has done pretty good. And then about Jose Ortiz,
oh, wait a minute. I wanted to ask you to say Jose's name again because you said it so beautifully.
Jose Fernandez, and then he has that middle name that's kind of weird, and you say, well, where did this come from? Mayovanex, and Fernandez is that's the name of a you know, one of those Aboriginal chiefs back in the Dominican Republic there from back on the days when the Europeans weren't there yet. Since I found that out, then I put him gave him the nickname the Chief. Because, you know, that's how it sounds.
Oh,
well, I mean,
okay.
When I write my articles in Spanish, that's the nickname I give.
Okay, yeah, I've seen Mayo Mayo. I've seen that before, so, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so,
now,
yeah.
Ortiz, he was, you know, as far as I know, he was injured last year. When I talked to him, he said, you know, it has happened pretty much along my whole career. I've always been injured at some point. I've never been able to play a full season, but whenever he's healthy, he's a good player. He has produced well. I mean, his 2010 season with SoftBank started really well. He was leading in home runs and in RBIs the Pacific League, but then he got injured and then he couldn't play. And then he came back at the end of the season, but you know, it wasn't the same. But he finished with 24 homers and I don't remember how many RBIs, but in the first 2 or 3 months of that season, he was doing pretty good. So he's a good player. I'm going to be a little sad to see him go if nobody else signs him.
Right.
Really, I saw on that site by Patrick Newman, the MPB tracker, the other day that he mentioned something about Lottie signing him. And then I emailed him and said, Patrick, what do you know about this? Because I haven't heard anything. And apparently it was just that he was referring to an article at the beginning of December where Lottie said they were thinking of getting him. But I guess at the end it didn't happen. So I hope he gets a chance in the future. He may come back somewhere, you know, at the middle of the season, maybe another team will pick him up. But he has been 7 years in Japan already. He has experience. He knows how to play in the league. You know, if he's healthy, he can definitely contribute to any team.
He does nothing but hit. In 2010, he had 24 home runs and 81 RBIs for the Hawks. So they just didn't play him last year. And I know he started out, I know at some point early in the season he got injured, but everybody in that outfield at one time or another was injured.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
He's just the one who got kicked to the side and never got put back in. So, you know, again, that's the way they treat some foreign players, and in this case he's a Latin guy, so I wanted to ask
you. Yeah, definitely, yeah.
All right. Well, we will have you back on the show at some point during the season, so stay ready for us, and we appreciate you coming on tonight.
Will do. Thank you very much.
All right, take care of yourself. Thanks.
Okay, you too. Bye.
All right, well, thank you, Claudio, for taking the time to wake up early and join us. We appreciate
it. Yeah, absolutely.
And like I said, we will have you on again sometime in the future. Well, sometime this season, hopefully. So,
let me ask you, why do you think that the Latin players are gaining in frequency? I mean, the obvious reason to me is of course the expanded rosters, the expanded gaijin quota is one, because it used to be two. You used to have two players.
Back in the olden days, it used to be just two per team, and it seemed like they always went for a pitcher and a position player.
I would think at that time was pretty rare to have pitchers. I remember one time where there were two pitchers in the Central League.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the 90s when I came, and I'm thinking mostly of the Dragons, and it seemed like the Dragons usually had one position player. And on occasion they had a couple guys who they expected to hit power.
Well, true. Well, they had, of course, they had the pitcher when it was a two-man limit. They had the pitcher, Kakugenji.
Yeah, Kakugenji, yeah, I was going to say him.
And a lot of Cebu Lions. It is true, there were a couple of pitchers, but, you know, they weren't that many. You know, they certainly weren't, like, major league guys. Pitchers tended to be from Taiwan or Korea.
You asked me about why I think, there are more Latin players in recent years. I think cost. It's cost effective.
Why is that, you think? So?
I think they can offer them less money and they can get them here, you know, especially guys who have not played in the major leagues without major league experience. They can wave some dollars that look really good in front of them and the guys will come over.
Okay.
Well, that's my opinion.
Well, I think that's not unreasonable. Certainly one of the reasons is... Well, it used to be one reason was the Hiroshima Carp Academy in the Dominican,
mm-hmm.
in that a lot of guys who came over here came that route. And Ruiz with the Salvador Ruiz with the Dragons, who's a interpreter and bullpen catcher and, you know, general handyman. He came over from the Carp Academy.
I always call him Luis. It's Luis. Ruiz. It's Ruiz.
Ruiz? Ruiz.
Okay.
Ruiz.
I'll correct myself next time I see him. He always answers.
Yeah, I know. But that's sort of the problem. The answer is, you know, if you called him Bob, he'd probably answer and make fun of you after you left. So, he wouldn't do that. He doesn't got a mean bone in it. Well, he does have. He's pretty fun. He's hilarious. Anyway, so a lot of guys, came that route. And another big route now for the Latin ball players is particularly the Chinchi Dragons, where Ruiz is now working, because they have a big presence in Santo Domingo, where they send guys over there every year to play winter ball with the Tigers,
mm-hmm.
with the Licey Tigers in Santo Domingo.
Right.
And so they have this big connection. They have people on the ground. They have players on the ground. They have people all around that Dominican winter ball milieu.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so they see what's going on, and they have their feet on the ground, and they've been able to get some pretty pretty good talent from Dominican players who've had, you know, just a handful of experience in the U.S. So that's one thing. Another thing, I think, is something I've suspected, and I guess I do need to do a study about, but something I've always suspected about players who succeed in Japan,
mm-hmm.
are players who have experience playing in foreign countries.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, and all those guys, especially the Dominican guys, they want to hit their way off the island, and it's all about getting off the island. And so they, most of them, I mean, you know, who are successful don't stay there. They played overseas.
Well, I would say that all of the ones who are successful don't stay there, because, you know, the days are done when the you know, General Trujillo was running, you know, the show, and the big players there were playing for the, you know, for his team, which I think was actually the Licey Tigers. I'm not certain, but the point being that the successful players all want to get out, and that's that's true, and there's a poverty issue and the motivation for that. But what I'm saying is a cultural issue, because if you've played, if you're from the Dominican or if you're from Venezuela, or from Colombia or Panama or Puerto Rico, and you've had any sort of experience, if you've been in the U.S. minors for more than a year, because the first year they often spend in the Dominican Republic,
mm-hmm.
Well, even then, you know, even if you're a Venezuelan guy and your only pro baseball is in the Dominican Republic, you've lived in a foreign country, you've played baseball and succeeded to some degree in a foreign country. And the adjustment, therefore, is something, although Japanese and Spanish are more different than Japanese and than Spanish and English, but if you've made the adjustment,
right, you know,
it's easier culturally living in a foreign country if you've already done it. If you're, and especially for most of these guys, they've been doing it for years.
Yeah, well, another thing they've been doing for years is lying about their age, and some of them even about their identities, as we found out with Fausto Carmona. I forgot his name. Carmona and wherever his name was, it's something Heredia, and he lied about his age and his name and all this stuff.
Oh, heaven forbid.
You got to be careful. But, Claudio will be in town, he said, for opening day this season, and plans to stick around for a while, so hopefully we can catch up with him. But getting back to the subject, he talked about Alex Ramirez. And,
sure.
You know, it's good to have goals and everything, and I like the fact that he's joined Yokohama, a team that he's going to have to, you know, lift, I mean, with all his might. And I don't mean with his play only. I think with his smarts, with his attitude, with his approach and everything, it's going to take such a high level of concentration to lift that team. But I think, I think he's really good for the team, and I think it's going to make a big difference. But the goals that he has, I'm not sure how he should approach that. Winning games is obviously the top priority, and is he going to have to sacrifice, reaching those goals quickly? I think he can get there. I think he can play a couple, three more seasons. I'm not sure about his outfield capabilities. I'm kind of worried about that. But he can stick around and get to those goals. He's really close.
So what you're saying is he's probably just going to, focus on helping the team and letting the records take care of themselves?
Yeah, I think so, because essentially he's close enough. I forgot how many homers, and I should look that up while we're talking right now, but he's not that far away. So, I mean, he's going to be like a player coach in my mind. I think he's going to be concentrating so much on what the other guys do and, try to get his, when it comes within the flow of the game and not force things.
Right.
But
it doesn't work. I mean,
it's a mental, stress situation for him that's going to be really high, in my opinion.
I think it is. I mean, he's been through it before, and he's not immune to it. But it happens to most players when they're at some plateau that, they hit a roadblock. They hit a mental roadblock usually, where, they can't push it aside. I can't say this from experience, but you can see it. So you see it so often that it seems like it's a real phenomenon. I can't say statistically it is, but yeah, I expect it'll be harder. The closer he gets, the harder it'll get. And having a team where, here's the thing with the Bay Stars is that I certainly, he expressed what he said, what Claudio said is Alex told him more or less exactly what Alex told me, which is that, and he's told you similar things as well,
yep,
that about what he wants to do in the future and his plans and his thinking about the Japanese game. Michael Westbay was very impressed with Jose Fernandez, and I think Alex has a similar approach that he, although it, in some ways different, because Alex is so much ingrained in, he's so much into the Japanese show.
Yeah, we know that. I mean, he's not just a hitter. He's a performer.
Right.
He's an entertainer.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It matches his character perfectly. It matches, the person he wants to be. He's a natural to play in Japan. So yeah.
But it's also really, really good when you're winning. But if you're out there dancing around, when you're losing by three or four runs in the eighth inning, it's it's not going to be well accepted, in my opinion. But I mean,
well,
it would be well accepted. It depends on where he is.
Yeah, but if you're in Yokohama and and they're losing by four runs and he hits a home run and he dances, people are going to be happy. I'll tell you, this is the way Japanese fans work.
Yokohama fans are going to be. I'm sure.
I'm not critical of the fans, and I'm not. How well it's going to be accepted? It's going to go over great.
Yeah. It probably is, but it just, for me, it's not going to really make sense. But he's 41 home runs away.
Okay.
From that going, he's 150 hits.
The 41 home runs sounds like 2013.
That sounds like two seasons for me. And same with the hits, 150. That's
too much. I see that this year.
150 hits?
Yep.
All right. I'll hold you to that. We're going to come back to, you know, show two of 2012, and we're going to check. I'm not sure. I mean, he got 133 last season, and that's, you know, he missed some games. He played in 137 games, and he played in some excruciating pain at times with that foot. So we'll see.
Last year, okay, he had 143 hits, right?
He had 133
hits. 133. Well, how many years has he had fewer than 150 hits? And the answer is two.
Two. No, the answer is, yeah, two. Last year and the first
and year. Correct. So
it's a good bet.
I think it's and of course the fact that it will become harder as he can't escape the elephant in the room that he's about to set a monumental record, because no foreigner has ever done that. We've had guys who've had 2,000 hits in the majors and Japan because, you know, they had 2,000 hits before they got here.
Yeah. Well,
but you've never had a foreigner have 2,000 hits, a foreign-born player have 2,000 hits only in Japan.
Well, you know, he's not going to get better with age, okay?
Agreed.
And I think we saw a chink in his armor. He had his consecutive game streak broken this past season, and I don't think he's going to play in every game.
No.
And
doesn't have to.
150. I would take that bet if that was the over under.
I think it's 50-50. I think playing in I think there's two things working in his favor. One is his second year that the ball's been in play, so there's less of an adjustment straight off the bat with what the pitchers are doing and what the ball's doing.
Straight off the bat. Nice.
unintentional, but I'll take it. And the other thing is that he's in Yokohama.
Yeah.
Now one of the things about Yokohama that people overlook, and one of the reasons that it tends to be a hitter's park, and
it's because the Yokohama pitchers are pitching. But anyway,
no, it has nothing to do with the Yokohama pitchers. I apologize for John saying that. You know, he's just trying to pull your chain. So okay, no, the reason it is one of the reasons is they play so many day games.
Mm-hmm.
Bay Stars certainly play more day games than any other team in the Central League, and that has a tremendous effect on these guys trying to hit 85 mile an hour fastballs, whether it's at night or in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even the better fastballs look good in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's a big difference. And Alex is going to get so many. It's a great park for home runs. He's going to get a few balls in the seats that wouldn't be flying out elsewhere. It's always been a good hitter's park. So yeah, I think he's going to get advantage. I think he's going to have an advantage from that. Now the other thing is about what he can do, and the thing about pushing the team forward is I understand what he's saying. I understand where he's going. I understand the whole thing, and you know, helping the team win is a monumental, you know, it's a real rush. But let me tell you something: is when I was back in the day when I was a columnist,
when I was a columnist.
You know, after I finished being a columnist for I think 12 years straight. I was researching a column, and I discovered something, which is a couple of patterns about teams that have unusual patterns of success or failure.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was the Hanshin Tigers, tending to be about a game or two worse every August. And another was the Yokohama Bay Stars being worse in the second half. It works in the final month of the season. Now, you know, you can speculate on why that is. Mm-hmm. And my guess would be is that when you're out of the pennant race every year,
yeah,
you tend to play worse in the final month of the year, in the final 2 months of the year, than you do the previous 6 months. You play worse than you should. You play worse at home. You play worse on the road. You know, you just get kicked around and you lose your your spirit now.
You got tin man-itis, a situation where you don't have enough heart, right?
Yeah, it's like they say in Japan, it's gogatsubyo. You know, it's like you can't wait for Golden Week because you can't stand where you're working. And Uchikawa told Seiichi Uchikawa said, yeah, it's like at the end of the season, just nobody gives, you know, it's hard to focus on the game. And, you know, that's working as much as the positive momentum of trying to get the team going. Now, if they can succeed, then they could be remarkably better in the standings because they won't have that drag at the end of the season, that normal base stars, you know, that riptide pulling them out, dragging them down to the, you know, dragging them further out of the picture.
Yeah, it's hard to concentrate when other teams are coming in and they have something to play for and you're just playing out the season
at the end of May, man.
They're out. They're done.
Well, okay.
Yeah. For the past 3 years, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, a lot of things are new, and certainly the Bay Stars, as far as the Bay Stars giving him a chance to manage, well, geez, you know, well, I think we're both half surprised they didn't ask him to manage next, you know, this season. they did not, as far as I know, interview Michael Westbay, but
we'll have to ask him.
Yeah, or Wayne Grassick, but they were pretty open in terms of who they might hire, and Kiyoshi Nakahata, I got his name correct this week, is a pretty way out there choice, and Ramirez makes more sense than Nakahata in my mind.
Well, so, I mean, yeah, in my mind too, and like I said, he's so knowledgeable, and I'm wondering how. I know his Japanese. He can speak a little bit of Japanese, and I think he can get enough across on the bench to tell guys, "Hey, you know, this is what's coming, and this pitcher is going to do this." And I just think he's going to be such a great influence on all those guys, especially the young guys who, you know, are going to have to make up for the loss of Murata, who's gone over to the Giants.
Right. Well, let me. As far as Alex being a manager, one of the things that we talked about right after the end of last season was his observations of other foreign managers.
Mm-hmm.
And his basic, the tone of what he was saying was quite interesting, is that, one, he's got, you know, he has cachet, he has credibility because of his playing here. Two, what his plan is to take the Japanese, he knows, you know, he has a sense for the things that you have to keep intact in the Japanese preparation. And his whole plan is to say, look, we're going to keep this intact in this fashion. We're going to, you know, you're going to get this, and I think we're going to practice the way you've always practiced, but we're not. We're going to practice the way you've always practiced by doing this, but we're going to do it a little differently.
Right.
But he's going to sort of like try to keep the core or the surface validity, keep that appearance and try to do things. Well, I think what he said was to do things more efficiently.
Yeah, I mean, I can see him formulating a strategy now for how he's going to keep the guys in a basic Japanese atmosphere and environment.
Right.
But make it more, like you said, make it more efficient, make it more useful, and make it more game situational, probably, and get them to, you know, because people a lot of times they say, okay, just like you're in batting practice, or just like you're, you know, just think that you're in fielding practice and do like, you know, do what you always do, and let the muscles take over, let muscle memory take over. But guys get nervous, and they start thinking too much, and he's going to help them, you know, maybe he's formulating a strategy to help them get used to this game situations. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I can't be specific because he wasn't specific, but he was talking about basically taking his knowledge of the Japanese game and the preparation and his knowledge of the way things are done in other contexts and sort of creating a Japanese acceptable version.
A hybrid.
A hybrid, but one which is perfectly, he's talking about something that is accessible to the players on a number of levels, both physical and mental. Now, recently had a chance to talk to. I was talking to a couple of former amateur players here at home, and one of them went on to have a long professional career, and the other's career ended in high school. But basically, their point of view of the Japanese game is that it's all about just running. The amateur baseball is basically running and conditioning. It has absolutely nothing to do with actually playing the game. And the odd thing, the irony of Japanese baseball is sort of like saying you've written the great American novel. You know, it's something capturing the irony of ironies would be the ultimate quest. One irony of Japanese baseball is what you just mentioned, the idea of thinking too much.
Right.
Thinking too much and trying to predict everything so that you will be ready when it comes. And at that instant, you won't have to think because you'll be, you know, be blocked into a successful strategy. So thinking too much in the games and thinking too little about practice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I said make it game situational. Don't just run the bases and run them, you know, with guys throwing them out. I mean, you know, make it so you understand what the purpose is and so that you practice what you're going to be doing in games. That's what it's about.
Right. It's just this mind-numbing, nail-bonding, grunting, heaving, boot camp nonsense. You know, just you gotta get rid of that. And I think it's willing to do it, but you have to accept that there's a comfort zone. And Trey Hillman, you know, and I talked quite a lot about keeping players to some degree in their comfort zone. His original thought of sacrifice bunt was sort of a security blanket for Japanese players.
Well, we're going to have to throw a blanket on this section of the
Yes, I agree. Thing.
But we'll be looking for him to become a manager in 2 or 3 years. Maybe not 2 or 3 years, but maybe 3 years, maybe 2015?
I think 3 years. I think 2 or 3 years.
All right. Good luck, Al. Let's talk about this camp thing, the big misnomer called spring camp that they say on the news, but we all...
Spring training, John Gibson, spring training.
We're in the dead of winter. I mean, parts of me were freezing off today on the way home, and I just left them there. I didn't bother
well,
to pick
and
them
John's,
up.
And he's a better man for it, you know? He wasn't using those pieces of his body. And
pizzas, yeah. I'm a better man. Maybe I'm a thinner man for it. I don't know about
good.
Better.
What's wrong with that?
But I mean, you know what? I really want to get into this camp thing. But you know, I really the only time I've ever gotten into it is when I went.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's freezing outside. It's January still. They're going to open this week,
February 1st, as on schedule.
We got tennis going on. Australian tennis just finished the Australian Open.
What's that got to do with baseball?
We got basketball going on. We're gearing up for the Super Bowl. It is no time to be talking about camp.
Hey, this is
that's
Japan.
What exactly.
But this is Japan. This is you got me. I'm just like yeah. Okay, it starts February 1st. So what?
Used
to it.
What are we gonna say? I mean, you know, camps are opening, and you know, it's not like pitchers and catchers just reporting the show. And everybody, get this: the Giants the other day, they showed up for what do they call that? The Jishu Tore.
Voluntary training.
Just you know, personal workouts or something, and they all did it in a group. So I'm like, well, what's so personal about this? This is the group personal workout.
No individual. Well, there is. But they do it, you know, this is the thing I do love, that misnomer of, or it's not a misnomer, technically I think the rules are the coaches can't be supervising, but the coaches are there watching.
Yeah,
the players are supervising and the coaches are watching.
Coaches are supervising the supervisors. I don't know what's going on.
Whatever. Anyway, my point being, hey, this is what we're here for, enjoy it. Now, I do get inundated by nonsense at camp. Because there's so little real news.
It's laughable what they do with the camps. You know, this guy ran this much, and this guy he played catch with this guy and threw the ball X number of times. I mean...
Well, okay, let's take... We don't have any really big sluggers this year, I think, coming out of the amateur draft. But let's say, you know, when Yoshinobu Takahashi was a rookie coming out of Keio University, there was a, you know, he must have had... at least three first home runs. Now, how can you have your first home run as a pro? How can you have it three times?
I got it.
You understand? You understand?
He had one in an inter-squad game.
No,
his first batting session.
His first batting practice.
He hit his first home run. Okay, and then... Off a machine. And then he hit one in an inter-squad game.
That'll usually be in an inter-squad game, and they'll count that.
And then he hit one in a preseason game.
That's possible. Usually they don't count the ones in the preseason game.
And then he hit one in the regular season.
Yeah, and everyone is the first. Oh, this is the first. This is like, his first home runs.
It's like 50 First Dates, that movie.
Exactly. It's like, yeah. We were talking about that. It's like
Warthog Day instead of Groundhog Day.
Japanese journalism is exactly Groundhog Day. They don't have any clue about what happened yesterday. Except I feel like we're the ones who are stuck. I mean, I was telling my friend the other night that the same reporters who were crowing, who would say the Tokyo Dome is full with 55,000 people here today, and then. Okay, let's put it this way. Okay, it's the old days before the playoffs. It's October 5th. The season's ending October 5th. Tokyo Dome's a sellout today, 55,000 people, blah, 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 blah. 2 weeks later, it's a Japan series.
Mm-hmm.
Tokyo Dome is a sellout with 44,000 people.
Wait a minute. What happened to the 10,000 people? What did you do to them?
Where
are they hiding?
Yeah, good question. Good question. Well, okay. But it's a sellout. So it's completely full. It's sold at 44,000. Okay, it's not sold out, but the seats are all, it's packed. The place is packed. But it had 55,000, it'd be big splotches of empty seats. When they had 44,000, there wasn't a place to sit. Okay, now how did this happen? And ask the reporters, they don't have a clue. Right? They have no idea what they're saying.
Get back to you on that.
Right. And then next year, they changed the rules, and 3 months after, 4 months after, they were saying it's sold out at 55,000. Now it's sold out at 44,000 for the regular season.
Yeah.
And nobody, it's like it is 1984. They should have called it 2004. Because 1984, it's like the truth yesterday. Yesterday's truth no longer exists. Today's truth always existed. Therefore, there's no discrepancy. How do these people live with themselves just repeating this?
Because they forget. They forget, and then nobody tells them, and no one.
When
you challenge them on it, it's like, oh yeah, you're right. Well, that's what they gave us, or they'll make something up. It's just like when you go to a city office in Japan.
The answer is they have to. Team tells 55,000, they have to say 55,000. But nobody said, well, before that was all nonsense. They have to say, oh no, this year it's 44th, whatever. So, and I've had team officials. Try it, tell me with a perfectly straight face at Cebu, I used to call them. Now, the reason the numbers were different in the Japan series was because they counted them.
So what were you doing before? What was going on before?
Making them up as they go along. So I asked the Cebu Lions team official once on the phone when back in the 90s when I was writing my guide, how come the Lions can get 58,000 people? Mm-hmm. Or except 50,000 people on for a sellout game on May 5th against the Kintetsu Buffaloes, but they can only get 38,000 for a Japan Series sellout against the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
Where did this 12,000 seats go? Oh, well, during the regular season, we're allowed to have people stand in the aisles. This is what you, and the fire department allows that? Whatever. And a Tigers official, when I mentioned something about teams not always giving proper numbers, he just smiled, rolled his head, giggled, and laughed. He says, "Oh, you've been there before, have you?"
Yeah. Well, numbers aside, I mean, it's still really hard for me to get into what's going on at this time of year. And that's the bottom line.
Joy. My point is, I know you don't like it, but you know what? It's here. Baseball's here. Enjoy what you got.
Well, if anybody excited about this time of year, you write in and let us know, because I gotta be honest. There's still snow on the ground out around my apartment here where the sun doesn't hit the street, and it's freezing. And
that's because you're gloomy. That's because you're gloomy about it. If you were a little sunnier, Gibson, if you were not a little less down about this time of year,
and I could melt that snow with my mere presence, huh?
You would be, your neighborhood would be lighting up with joy of spring. Instead, you're glooming around, and it's going... that's Groundhog Day, baby.
Come back.
You come out of your apartment and your neighborhood says, uh-oh, another month of winter.
I'm having an out-of-body experience here. Come back. Your mouth is running off with your body.
Okay, anyway, but yeah, I love a camp. I'm so glad that baseball's here. I wish I could be in Okinawa. Of course, I would love to be in Okinawa for the next month. It could happen.
Yeah. Or Miyazaki. Dennis Sarfate of the Hiroshima Carp sent me a little message the other day. Said I'm getting ready to come in, and I'm like, oh yeah, it's camp time. But dude, it's so early. I was thinking, and I was chatting with him, but I kept thinking, hey, home, didn't you leave the? He had a double hernia, is what he had last year. He said.
Great.
He said he's all healed up and everything, but I'm like,
But I'll tell you, who you want to feel for is they used to have spring training on February 1st in places like Hamamatsu.
No.
Chiba. Shizuoka was a Shizuoka. I think the Bay Stars spring training camp used to be Shizuoka. The Dragons trained in Hamamatsu.
You hit a baseball with a frozen bat and you just want to cut your hands off and get new ones.
Hamamatsu. Yeah. Hamamatsu is like the windiest city in Japan. Ooh. Just when you want to be on February 1st. Wow. So, anyway, yeah, so that's, but I'm happy baseball's here. I have mixed emotions about it because it's my bread and butter, but it also means so much preparation to do before the start of the season that I always wish, I always want to ask the teacher if we can have an extension on our homework.
Right.
Teacher, can I have another month before the season starts? I haven't got the rosters finished yet.
That's right. They don't even have the rosters up on the MPB website. Yeah, nothing's been updated. So it's not, for me, it's too early. Okay. All right.
So no question about spring training for John, because he might not be able to handle it emotionally.
I think I could handle it.
That was a mental health, we're going to give John a little help here.
I'm going to take my meds this time.
I think I'm going to get smacked tomorrow.
No way. I'm not buying.
All of our contact, I know.
I'm going to smack you with this one now. We're going to play a game called Who Fits Where. How's that?
This is one of my days.
The story I saw on Friday that the Dragons were interested in reacquiring, and I put the emphasis on acquiring.
Yeah.
Kenshin Kawakami, a pitcher.
Kenshin Kawakami. Mm.
And, okay. So then I thought, there are a number of guys who probably could or should come back to the state, come back from the States, who are over there just kind of kicking around, not doing anything. Kawakami went to the Braves, and he was mediocre. I mean, he wasn't hideous. His ERA was middle fours.
In that park, it's hideous.
Yeah, and then that's a hitter's park down there in Atlanta.
No, it's a pitcher's park now. It's a pitcher's park. Turner Field's a pitcher's park.
All right, if you say so. But
the County Stadium was a hitter's park because it was a. It was a normal-sized stadium, that's way up in the hills. It's got an altitude, baby.
All right. His whip was about 1.4, so that's pretty bad. I mean, he was a mess. And I was saying all last season, he should come back. Not last season, the season before last. I kept saying he should come back, He's just getting racked around out there. Now he's back with the Dragons. That story went from they're interested in him on Friday to they signed him on Saturday. And it got me thinking about who else should be coming back, who could possibly come back. Now there are 16 guys, actually 17
First of all, what's the criteria for somebody should come back? Now, what do you mean when he should come back? Because I think you need to explain that.
I know you have a what?
Philosophy here.
A philosophical difference or indifference.
But
people saying that someone should come back and
but,
what to
but,
do
so
their...
what do you think what's your trigger for saying he should come back?
Well, for me, here are the guys. I counted 17 guys who basically are essentially stateside. Some of them are, a couple of them are not signed.
Not counting all the minor league guys who are over there.
Not counting all the minor league guys. We're talking about guys at major league level or have pitched or played in the major leagues.
Or the Pacific and Central Leagues. Remember, guys who have actually had careers as opposed to the young guys over there trying to.
Right, these guys who are established and went over either via posting or via free agency.
There's probably a dozen guys over there playing in the independent leagues and in the minors who've never been in the Pacific.
Yeah, we don't even know who their names. I saw some of those guys, too. I didn't know who they were. Okay. And for me, the criteria would be that you're not contributing to your team over there the way you could contribute to a championship, perhaps, over here.
Well, that would almost immediately mean everybody. Because everybody's going to be more valuable.
Nobody's winning championships. Yeah.
No, they'd all be more valuable here because the level of competition is lower, so everybody should come back.
Well, and I should preface this by saying, you know,
Darvish is going to be more valuable in Japan than he would be in America.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, a guy like Kawakami, he played on a team that was successful, and he didn't win a Japan series.
Well, that's because none of the Dragons did that.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not saying that they could contribute to a championship, but they could contribute to a successful team over here. And they're just mediocre over there. The numbers are not good. They're not playing a lot. There's basically, I just remembered I forgot somebody else, Fukudome. I left him off of my list there, so let's make it 18. What's that?
I said he doesn't have a job. I think you'd basically want to go with the guys who don't have jobs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's obviously the best place to start.
Yeah, but if you're somebody like, if you're Yoshinori Tateyama,
mm-hmm.
and somebody's going to give you a major league job, why come back to Japan?
Yeah, but he had success. He had success last year. He had success,
You have a chance. You know, we've had this. Yeah, well, we had this discussion, and I just intercede this one last time on this issue before you get to, you run on it. Is that if your goal is to be in the majors,
right?
Then being in Double A, you know, going to minor league camp is a vastly closer than going to Okinawa on February 1st. You are a phone call away from the major leagues if you're in Double A. You're a year away from the major leagues if you're in Okinawa.
Yeah.
Okay,
all right.
So that's that point. So if that's your goal, if that's what you're trying to achieve, and you think, you know, and you have confidence in your ability, and you know you have some, and this is, you know, you're secure enough to do it,
mm-hmm.
then that makes perfect sense. That strategy makes perfect sense, regardless of what your value would be in Japan.
Okay.
Well,
my criteria, I'm looking at guys who have been over there at least one, you know, 2 or 3 years, not just 1 year, because 1 year doesn't really tell you that much, and maybe that second year will tell you something, that third year. So I wouldn't put Tateyama in that, and he's had some success too. But guys like Keigawa, who really have never had success on the major league level, you know, he'd be very useful back here.
Sure.
Hideki Okajima,
right?
He's been successful here before, two places, with the Giants and with the Fighters.
Well, and he was surplus material with the Giants, and
they
got rid of him. Yeah, they got rid of him for nothing, and he was very valuable with the Fighters. He was more valuable with the Fighters, and he was more valuable with the Red Sox than he had been with the Fighters. So. So I'm inclined to think, given his age, that's the hard part. You know, that's the hard part, whether he has enough left going. I mean, okay, anyway, moving along. Go ahead. Continue.
Moving along. This is the one that's going to surprise people, but I think Ichiro should come back. And maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but the year after, I think he's ready to come back. I would even say that he should come back after this upcoming season, because
go ahead.
And hear me out. He can play this season. I think he'll be in the last year of his contract, and then he can come back and he could play with Oryx and help that team step right in. He would still be a big draw, so he's going to attract a lot of fans, help boost the Pacific League and some of one of the teams that's been in the B class for a while now, and create excitement. And he can contribute. Yeah. If he can keep his, you know, snooty dignity to a if he can limit it or control it somehow.
Good luck with
he can
that.
Get that team, yeah, good luck with that. He can get that team to the postseason, I think.
Okay.
He'd be a perfect fit there right now or next year. But he's not the kind of player anymore who's going to go out we ran a story in the paper the other day that looks like Eric Wedge, the manager, is going to take him out of the leadoff spot.
Correct.
And
which makes perfect sense because he's a lousy leadoff hitter.
Yeah, because he only hits.
He was never a good leadoff hitter in the majors. He was never a good leadoff hitter.
And what do you mean by
that? He wasn't a good leadoff hitter when he was the MVP.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a leadoff hitter with a .330 on base percentage, you know?
Yeah, he might hit .332, but his on base percentage would be only a few points higher than.
I know, because he doesn't walk.
So yeah, I mean, you bring him in, he could hit third with Oryx, put Goto in second hole, put him in the first hole, you could put him anywhere. Anyway, I mean, there's things to think about, but another guy I think should come back is Daisuke. I would even consider him a bust. As much money as Boston has paid for him, they're not really getting much out of him. So another, you know, he's a guy who should come. Well, should. I think if he came back, if he stepped right back in to
somebody get on the phone and say tell Matsuzaka that his future is in Japan because John Gibson knows what's best for him.
Well, I didn't say I know what's best for him, but he could step right. He comes back. He helps, especially the Lions. Can you imagine if they got him this year? That's a championship.
First of all, he's under contract through the end of the year. I think Bobby would kind of like to have him the second half of the season. I think he's going to be dynamite with the Valentine when he comes back.
He had a 6-year deal, right, with the Red Sox?
This is his last year.
And
he's going to be.
And he's going to get released.
You know what? He'll be a free agent. What's going to happen is he's going to come back for the Tommy John surgery. And he's going to have a little extra gas on his fastball because of what happens for guys who do the rehab, right?
Yeah, the young guys.
He's young. He's not that. Most of the guys who have come back from Tommy John surgery, almost all of them have better velocity than before they had it.
I've heard it, but most of those guys have it early on, right? Although
No, 30s. Well, now younger guys have it. It used to be old guys who wanted
it. Used to be an old guy surgery, yeah.
Yeah, Tommy John, but you know, all kinds of people are having it now, so. He's what, 29? Yeah, he's over the hill.
Yeah, well.
No, I take that back. He's 31, I think, now. So it's hard to think of Matsuzaka as being 31 or you know, even past 20. But, yeah. So anyway, yeah, the question is, would he help the Lions? Sure. He should come back. He could help the Lions. Hey, Darvish could help the Fighters.
Yes, he could.
So he
but he's
come
gone.
Back.
He just left. No, I already said the criteria was a guy who's been over there 2 or 3 years.
Ago. Okay.
Stop it. I know you don't like this. I know you don't like it. And I've only brought it up because Kawakami's coming back.
Okay.
I mean, I've thought about it and I've said it a few times in the office. Whether you were there or not to hear, I don't know. But now that one of the guys has come back, and I mean, he's coming back. He went with. I'm sorry.
Had a bunch of guys come back in the last 4 years.
Yeah, in the last 4 years. But, I mean, one of the guys I said should come back. I mean, I actually thought Iwamura was going to continue playing over there, and I didn't really see why he got bounced around so much because he completely remade himself as a baseball player to play with the Rays and play second base after being a power-hitting third baseman here with the Swallows. And I thought
second baseman.
Yeah, he made him a powerless second baseman with – But, you know, he still made it, and I thought he could still play over there. And then he came back over here, and he was maybe he just needs to get to readjust again.
These guys get done in by injuries. I think that's, you know, I think.
And age, baby. Age.
Well, I'll tell you, I think the infielders, they're getting wiped out in the majors.
Yeah.
The infielders, with the lone exception, I think, of Iguchi,
mm-hmm.
most of these guys were wiped out by injuries. Yeah. Kazumatsui, Iwamura. Who's the other infielder who went over there? Nishioka is obvious.
Nishioka.
There's some one other person I'm thinking of, but maybe it's just the Matsui and Iwamura stand out so much. But the outfielders have done well. I mean, Taguchi was a better player over there than he was here at that stage of his career.
Shinjo was the same.
He was about the same. Shinjo's in Shinjo land.
Yeah, but he hit. I mean, he was only a 250 hitter in Japan. He hit for a while. He was hitting 300 with the Mets.
I mean,
it was kind of ridiculous.
Okay.
Anyway, so Keigawa, I think the Tigers. If he can go back to the Tigers, that would really solidify their run at a playoff spot.
Oh, Oryx. Oryx is interested in. Oryx is trying to get him.
Yeah. And then, like I said, Okajima probably back to the Fighters. But I mean, like I said, I preface this by saying Yokohama and Rakuten and, you know, Oryx can use just about anybody who would come back. So
let's talk about some of the guys who have come back.
We will maybe do that on another show.
Okay,
yeah.
We can.
I don't know. I knew you weren't gonna like that topic, but
it's an interesting topic. It's an interesting topic, and I do like it, but I just have to keep asking what's in that person's plans, because it's not always, the question is, well, who will he help, which is a lot of teams he might help, but the question is what's best for him is another issue.
Right.
But, yeah, there are guys. The question is now, can he be a major success here? I think the criteria is this. Can you be a major success in Japan and have absolutely zero value in the majors?
No, that's too extreme. And you don't have to be a major success here. You just have to be able to contribute to
if you're a guy who's basically there are these, there are talents.
And zero is, come on, that's too low.
No, but
they don't even let you.
Who are really useless in the majors, who just can't get a job, but who have a niche in Japan because of some skill set, this is a possibility.
Okay.
Now, we did have, we had this question last year, and Rami-chan and I talked about it, where should Matt Merton go? When Rami-chan thinks, he should stay in Japan, as Lane Grassick did. My point of view is it's still the same, you go what's best for you.
Mm-hmm.
And right now he's with the Tigers. And Rami's point was that, he's really good if he's in a good hitter's park and the guys are throwing 87 mile an hour fastballs. And they're going to do that. He'll get a lot of that in Japan, and he can make a good living hitting 87 mile an hour fastballs. And why go back to the States when you got a good living here? And I understand that, but I think the question is, the question are other things. Where do you want to be with your family? Is a massive thing. He's got two young kids, so if you want to be in the States, the question for him is this: if he gets a if somebody says, Matt Merton, we're going to give you a major league contract,
mm-hmm.
not an invite to camp. We're going to give you a 2-year major league contract to play for the Mariners or whoever, the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah, he's going to jump on that.
Yeah, then he'd take it.
Yeah.
But those do not come.
No, they don't grow on.
I do not think, to be honest, I don't think there's been a single major league player who's gotten a position player who's got a guaranteed contract after playing in Japan.
All right.
Doesn't happen.
All right. On to our next session.
Okay.
Fielding questions.
Yay! Guess who's here?
It's from Claudio in Toronto.
Wow.
Surprise, surprise.
Claudio! Long time no here. Hold on. Okay,
who do you think will be the next foreigner to make the Japanese Hall of Fame? Now, I looked and I saw three guys. Victor Starfin,
right,
who was called the blue-eyed Japanese. He was the first professional pitcher in Japan to win 300 games.
Right.
Wally Yonomine.
Of course, Starfin, although born in Russia, he grew up in Japan.
So he's basically...
He went to high school in Asahikawa. So.
He's as Japanese as you come, but he was not Japanese, and he was a non-Japanese who was... raised in Japan, but born outside.
During the war, he was a non-citizen, so he was, as was Sadahara. Oh, they were both foreigners.
Yeah. And that's who the third one was I was going to put was Marseille was Sadaharu Oh.
Correct.
Who's Taiwanese. So,
well, the misconception there, which he has corrected with me, is he now holds a Taiwan passport, but his father was from the Chinese mainland, and he used to be, he was a, so his father was from the Chinese mainland and mm-hmm. had been a citizen of the People's Republic of China until he gave up on the PRC. His mother is from Tama Prefecture in Japan.
Okay.
Who died last year at the age of 106. Wow.
106. Wow. So he's, yeah. Well,
he's Japanese ethnically, you know, he's an ethnic Chinese, but culturally he's Japanese. So.
All right. So who do you think will be the next foreign person voted?
Well,
in?
Boomer, yeah, as you said, Boomer and Wayne Grassic had some of the nice points up in his recent column about him, and I'll give a shout out to Wayne.
Good job, yeah, it was a good column.
It was interesting because Boomer did win the election, and Wayne pointed out that this was his last year of eligibility, so he'll have to go to the Veterans Committee. That's not unlikely. I mean, that's not unlikely. Boomer is a well-liked player with a number of veteran players, and he's a good guy, and he's friendly. He comes to Japan now and then,
mm-hmm.
so that's possible. I think
he came up 13 votes shy of the 236 that are required to get.
Now Bass is no longer eligible. And
mm-hmm.
Who's going to be the next? Tuffy is sort of an inflammatory figure, oddly enough, for a guy who just loved Japan. I think the next one will be Alex Ramirez.
I think Tuffy's going to get his share of votes. Yeah,
sure.
Talk
well,
about
Tuffy is because of his standing.
His
on
numbers,
home.
Yeah.
Yeah, his numbers. I mean, he's got an amazing number of home runs.
And his longevity.
I mean, I can tell you, just as look
yeah,
him up.
Yeah, you're looking him up. Yeah, he had a lot of longevity, as did as does Alex. And, you know, Leon and Laron Lee, are there eligibility?
Yeah,
here.
I would think Leron Lee would be, both of the Lee brothers would be, it's a shame, you know, they can't get in together. They're an amazing tandem, an amazing contribution to Japanese baseball.
And Cromartie, Warren Cromartie, I don't think he had the longevity, right? He just kind of, he wasn't here long enough, so I'm not really even sure that he'll get any votes. But yeah, I think Tuffy's gonna make a good run at it. He would certainly get my vote, and he'd be my odds-on favorite to be the next guy. And it's too bad, you know, he went at the end of his career. He wasn't able to sign another contract. Nobody wanted him. I think they didn't want to pay the money.
Right.
That was the biggest thing. But he did get injured.
Well, there were issues.
I think that
464 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
Is really an impressive feat.
Yeah.
Just for the list here, the top five career home run hitters for foreign players are Tuffy Rhodes 464, Alex Ramirez 359.
Okay, number two already.
Number two, he's three past Alex Cabrera.
Mm-hmm.
Number four is Leron Lee 283, and mm-hmm. then that's number four, and number five is Boomer Wells at 277. Leon Lee's right behind him. Ralph Bryant's a little far, but they're behind, and then we get to some real old timers. So yeah, real interesting. I think Tuffy Rhodes is deserving. Yeah, 464 home runs coming over here when you're, 26 years old, I think he was, at 27, and that's pretty amazing.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you very much, Jim, for your time. I appreciate it. A reminder, we want to invite you guys to send your comments or questions. I'm sure you got questions after this episode, so send them in. You can send them via MP3 file, and we can play them on the show if you keep them under a minute. And you can visit our Facebook page. Or you can email me at yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we'll get it on the show.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, and we will be talking with you soon.
All right. Enjoy your spring training.
Spring training, baby. It's baseball. It's baseball. It's baseball, John, but not as we know it.
All right. Have a good week.
All right.
We will be back in a couple weeks. Talk to you guys later. We'll be right back.